We're going to call a meeting of the Agriculture and Rural Development Policy Committee to order. Getting a little bit of a late start because of, I heard Representative Schumacher burning toast this morning. Well, good morning, everybody. We have two bills on the agenda this morning. One dealing with the TB, the other with the horses. We'll call Representative Fabian to introduce his bill and get us going this morning.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee. As many of you know, bovine tuberculosis has been a big issue across the state. It has affected my area of the state particularly because that's where the bovine TB was found. It's been a long struggle. We finally have achieved the TB-free status, and the Board of Animal Health and local producers and USDA and DNR and so forth, are breathing a heavy sigh of relief after what we've been through up there. As I said, it's been a big concern in my district. I have a friend who had a herd of just over 500 cattle, and they detected TB in one of the cows, and he was eventually got into the buyout program, but he had to continue to maintain his cattle while they were being shipped and so forth. And he said one of the most difficult things he ever did was he'd have to go out during calving season in the morning, and he had been basically required to dispose of those calves right away. And it's been very emotional. It's had a broad effect. The reason for this bill.
Excuse me, Representative Fabian, have you moved your bill yet? House file 1890.
Okay. I would like to move that House file 1890. And my assumption is that after today, we need to go to taxes with this.
That's correct.
Okay.
He's on this committee. Oh, correction. Would Representative Vogel move the bill for Representative Fabian?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you. Proceed, Representative Fabian.
Thank you. The reason for bringing this bill forward is that in the past legislation that was passed with regards to bovine tuberculosis, the producers in the area received a property tax credit because they were subjected to a tremendous number of restrictions that were imposed upon them. And in order to be able to follow those, there was some losses that they incurred with regards to their personal revenues. And I think that members have the restrictions that are still in place. In the old legislation, the bovine TB tax credit went away by law when we achieved the TB-free status. Working with Bill Hartman here from the Board of Animal Health and the local producers, we found out that there still are a number of testing requirements, a number of movement certificates and permits that are still in place, risk assessments, high fencing, security, and so forth. In some cases, producers who are part of the buyout have pasture land, but because of the restrictions that are still in place, they can't use their pasture land. They can't bring another herd in to that, whether they buy it. They can't buy it because they're in the buyout. And also, if they have a neighbor that would like to use their pasture land, they can't do that either. So what I'm asking for in this bill is to reinstate the property tax credit that was somewhat unsuspectingly taken away from those local producers. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any questions from members of the committee? Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Fabian, I understand your desire to help your constituents, but you're asking for general fund dollars to go to support individual businesses, they being farms, but they are individual businesses. And I appreciate the concern, but this was supposed to be a temporary proposal. What happened here? Did the during the special session, was there a legislation? Was this a legislative act that removed the credit, or was it just time that removed this?
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hansen, if I may, May I introduce Dr. Bill Hartman from the Board of Animal Health, who has worked with this extensively. If that would be okay with you, Representative Hansen, I'd like him to address that, please.
Dr. Hartman, go ahead.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, and to Representative Hansen's question, the way the bill was written is that when Minnesota was declared TB-free, the credit would end. And nobody had a clear vision of how this thing was going to play out, so we envisioned that when the state was TB-free that there'd be no restrictions on anybody anymore. And what has happened is DNR is still doing in this area, if you look at the map behind me, that big blue area is the old modified accredited advanced zone, and there were 276 cattle herds in that area that we were had restrictions on. When the state became TB-free, it shrunk down to that smaller red circle, which is the management zone. And in that zone, DNR is still doing, that's where we found TB in deer in the past, and DNR is still doing surveillance of the deer in those herds, and they will do it at least one more year if they don't find anything, and then they will probably stop. But while they're doing that, we are still restricting the movement of the 22 cattle herds in that area and still requiring an annual test on them because we're not sure the deer are free of it yet.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I know at least I voted for this because it would go off when there was a TB-free declaration, that it wouldn't be going on and the costs were incurred. I think, Mr. Chair and members, this is a good example of when a program or a project becomes an entitlement. And I understand the costs. I understand the business cost here, but you're asking for general tax dollars to go on to pay for this. And I think it sets a bad precedent that can go on where you are going in and making some of these costs. The public is paying for the costs already in terms of, I think we've paid for fencing. I think we've paid for certainly the sharpshooters. We've had a huge public cost that's going into this. And with all that coordinated effort, we're now TB-free. And I think the property tax credit should end as it was described when this was passed.
Any follow-up comments or questions, Representative?
Because the restrictions, thank you, Mr. Chair, because the restrictions still are in place, we still have ongoing expenses that are no different today than they were during the time that we were in the TB state, you might say. And now that we're TB-free, for these producers in that red area, they still have those restrictions in place. And they have expenses that are still being incurred as a result of those expenses. Thank you.
Representative Szymanski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And probably for Dr. Hartman, in the management zone, you have several herds. Are these existing herds yet, or are these former herd locations that you're still monitoring? I guess my question is, and I think Representative Fabian referred to this, that some of the property owners cannot, repopulate their pastures with cattle and so forth. Are we addressing that specifically, or just the cattle farmers in general in that management zone?
Dr. Hartman.
Mr. Chair and Representative Szymanski, it's both. So it's both herds that people that still have cattle in that area, and it's people that went in the buyout and have pasture land in that area that they can't use for cattle anymore.
Next question from Representative Eakin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. And I just wanted to address, I guess, the issue, too, of the extension going beyond what was originally agreed to when it went TB-free. And again, you didn't anticipate that there were going to be these ongoing requirements and restrictions. And I can understand, somebody being concerned about it continuing on after the costs of the TB outbreak and problems have ceased to exist, but the costs are still there. And I think that there are some real benefits to be had in having stopped the TB from spreading. to the whole state. So it's not, in my view, any kind of entitlement here. This is something that the whole state benefits from. So I think this is a good bill, and I just wanted to make that statement and in support of the bill. So thanks.
Representative Morrow.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Fabian, I'm trying to recall what happened last year and trying to resolve the budget impasse. Was this program part of that discussion? And if so, were we told that the Board of Animal Health would be able to cover the cost?
Mr. Chair,
Representative Fabian.
Mr. Chair, Representative Morrow, quite honestly, I cannot answer that question. I don't know what discussions took place with regards to the Board of Animal Health being able to cover the costs. Maybe Dr. Hartman can address some of that. The letter that I have that you have in your packet says that's dated, I believe, October 12th, spelled out to the producers, you know, what was going to be coming forward. So I would defer.
Dr. Hartman, any follow-up to that?
Mr. Chair and Representative Morrow, so you're asking, would we cover the cost to provide this credit out of the Board of Animal Health budget?
Representative Morrow.
Let me try to restate it, Dr. Hartman. Maybe I'm not saying it well, and I'm just going off of notes here, that last year this committee was told that cuts made to the Board of Animal Health could be absorbed because the funds used for the bovine TV wouldn't be needed because so much progress was being made. So I'm trying to understand what's changed.
Dr. Hartman.
Well, Mr. Chairman and Representative Morrow, the board has never paid this TB tax credit out of its own budget. So that would be something different than what has happened. The good news is, because the state was declared TB free, we've gone from paying the property tax credit to 276 herds down to 22 herds. So it's a cut in what amount of money is being spent, but it was never in the Board of Animal Health's budget.
Mr. Chair.
Follow-up, Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Fabian, how much money are we talking about?
Representative.
Mr. Chair, Representative Morrow, at this, I requested a fiscal note. I do not have that at this time. I don't know when we'll get that, but certainly we'll have that available before we go to taxes.
Representative Morrow.
I think there may be another.
Does research staff have any indication of that fiscal note?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Morrow, I have a fiscal note, a preliminary fiscal note from the Department of Revenue that indicates the cost of $100,000.
Mr. Chair, if I could
Representative ask, Morrow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think the question is for you procedurally. Do you plan on moving this bill forward without having a fiscal note brought to the committee?
The plan was to move it on to the tax committee when they would have the exact fiscal note at that time, and it would be aired in the tax committee.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Question next from Representative Ward, I believe, had a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Morrow asked one of my questions about that because I was trying to find the actual cost, and I just heard $100,000 is, I think, what I heard. Is that correct, Mr. Chair? Representative Fabian? Okay.
Representative Fabian.
Yeah, Mr. Chair. Yes, that's correct.
Okay, so my question then.
Representative Ward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question then is, if it's a $100,000 cost, Representative Fabian, where do you anticipate getting the revenue from? Where do you anticipate getting the $100,000 from?
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I get Representative and Committee. I've had discussions with Chair Davids in the Tax Committee, and he has indicated to me that you know, we're going to be able to move this bill forward, and that's a discussion that we'll have to have as we move forward in taxes.
Representative Ward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So we can't say, Representative Fabian, if this is going to, you know, is it going to come to as a direct hit to our property owners who already have higher property taxes based on some of the actions from last year's legislative session, or small businesses or farmers? I mean, we can't say that it's not going to or going to be a direct hit to any of those folks, because every time that we offer some kind of a shift or release, you know, or aid or whatever you want to call that, it usually impacts another group of people. So that's my concern, is that that group of people that we're talking about, even though it's you know, a relatively small number in the overall budget operation of $100,000. So, you know, I would really like to know, you know, exactly what what group of people or, you know, are going to be impacted by this. And I, Representative Fabian, I hope you understand what I'm talking about here.
Representative Ward, that's a good comment. That will surely be fully vetted in the Tax Committee. Any comments again, Representative Fabian?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Ward, I guess when you look at it in the big picture, we all will to a certain degree. Taxes are what they are. Thank you.
Representative Vogel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to try to get this straight now. Who put the ban on these 20-some properties and says, first of all, it said that, they can't raise any more livestock there, and is that going to be a permanent thing, or when is the decision that it could be released?
Dr. Hartman?
Mr. Chair and Representative Vogel, this area is the area where we've found TB and deer, so there's a great concern with the cattle in that area getting reinfected. Now, things are going well in that we haven't found any infection in cattle in 3 years, and we haven't found any in the deer in 2 years. So it's going in the right direction, but it's such a big deal that we don't want to quit too early. So DNR is planning another surveillance next year. If they don't find anything, their intention would be to stop. Similarly, we spent about $3.5 million taking cattle out of that area. We did a herd buyout. We bought out 46 herds to get them out of there so that there wouldn't be this transmission between the deer and the cattle. We also put up 10-foot fence that the state paid 90% of, the owners paid 10%. Around their stored feed and winter feeding areas so that we would keep the deer out of the cattle feed so we'd stop this disease. It appears to be working, but this is our final step now to make sure that the disease is gone. So when DNR gives us the all clear, that's when we would remove these restrictions.
Okay. Follow up, Representative Vogel?
No, that's good. Thank you.
Representative Eakin, or Representative Falk had a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Fabian, I guess I've got a couple questions, and I mean, we're looking at a property tax credit here, and for whatever reason, how this was set up in the past, that was the way it was done, but going forward, is this the most articulate way to put forward this type of a credit? Because I think that we need to have some more clarity about this. I mean, why is it being done through a property tax credit versus some other type of, like, say, an income tax credit on a person's farm schedule, where I think it would be more appropriate?
Dr. Hartman or Representative Fabian?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Falk, the simple answer to that is that this is the system that has been in place, and we just want to extend that. When I take a look at the number of dollars that Representative Ward made reference to, I would not necessarily be comfortable with trying to reinvent the wheel. I think in this case the wheel has been invented, and we're just trying to keep the wheel on the car, you might say. I have had some discussions with Revenue about the bill. They do have a couple of minor concerns, and I'm willing to work with them to make any modifications to the bill that would be required to make people more comfortable with it.
Representative Falk.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Fabian, I guess perhaps the wheel is square, because let's just say that I am a farmer that has 100 acres and I have a herd of X size on it, and you're a farmer that has 200 acres and a farm that's got a smaller number of animal units. And if we're going to do this based on property tax credit, how is this fair versus actually what the cost is or what the impact was on your farming operation based on we're dealing with animal units or number of animals in a herd? Why not have done it in a way that looks at the cost as a percentage of income or some type of income credit? This just seems like it's a very inarticulate way to provide this type of relief. I mean, that's ultimately what we're doing here, is providing some relief to these individuals, but by means of a property tax credit, even if we've done it in that way in the past, it doesn't seem like it makes a lot of logical sense. There's probably a more direct, more targeted way that would more acutely address the issue than doing it in this way. That's my opinion. If you can prove me wrong, I'd like to hear that argument.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Falk, I would defer a little bit to Dr. Hartman on this. I do know that it was a fairly complicated formula that was based on the number of animals in the herd, the number of acres that were involved, and so forth, and maybe you could expand on that for me, please.
Dr. Hartman?
Mr. Chair and Representative Falk, I'm not sure exactly how it's been managed by Revenue, but there are people here from the Department of Revenue who might be able to explain how the property tax credit is given. I'm not real familiar with it.
We do have Revenue staff on hand if you'd care to hear from them, Representative Falk.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I mean, I guess for all of us, perhaps, to have this refresh, and I mean, I don't think that we should just be doing things because that's the way that they've been done in the past. I mean, if there is a more targeted way that addresses this and more accurately distributes the dollars, if that's what our goal is here, to those who have been most impacted, I think that would be useful to hear.
Anybody from the Department of Revenue staff who could give us a quick thumbnail sketch of how the credit was implemented and why it's going to be continued in this fashion. Good morning, and introduce yourself for the record, please.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Jason Nord, and I work in the Property Tax Division at the Department of Revenue. And Representative Falk, I think it was, I think your notions on some level were correct when the credit first came along. I think when the credit first came along, it was, I think the thought process was that because the land in this area is really essentially best used for cattle farming, and if there are serious restrictions on the ability to use that land for cattle farming, then the land's value had essentially plummets, and therefore the property tax attributed to that land should be covered. So I think originally the first conception of the credit would be that it would be equal to the property tax on those properties. It was later amended to be adjusted to be scaled relative to the size of the cattle, because there was, you know, some landowners up there with over 1,000 acres and some landowners with a small number of acres. So it was then changed so that it would be calculated either $5 per acre for the first 160 acres or $5 per acre times the highest number of cattle tested. And so I think you're right on some level that maybe the property tax method, when this originally came along a couple years ago, was a difficult way to apply the benefit. But now that we've been doing that for 2 years, and this is essentially going to just continue it, the execution of this bill would be relatively simple because it's stated as whatever they got for a credit last year, they'll get again until these restrictions go away. So from this point going on, I think it's relatively simple to administer, and coming up with a new method would be more complicated. But when this originally came about, perhaps the property tax vehicle was not the simplest way to go.
Thanks, Mr. Nord. Follow-up, Representative Falk.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the clarification there. I guess one of the things that caught my interest is you made the comment that this was to help offset the valuation of the property if it were no longer useful for basically farming purposes or grazing purposes. Have we seen that the value of this land has decreased, or has it increased?
Mr. Nord, could you comment on that?
Sure. Mr. Chair, Representative, I haven't looked at the valuation of properties in this area per se, so I couldn't answer that. I do know statewide, obviously, agricultural values are continuing to rise, but I can't speak to what values are doing in this area.
Well, I would just add that if they cannot restock with cattle on pasture land, hurts in the short term the income potential of that land. It may not affect the long-term value, but in the short term, if you can't have an income, that does affect your income year to year. Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Falk, to go to your question a little bit, I can tell you that a lot of the pasture land that we use in my part of the state is land that really is not, they are not tillable acres. So the soil use for these lands is pasturing, and if you cannot repopulate that land, in my mind the value is going to go down. You know, who would want to buy a piece of property that is basically used only for pasturing and not be able to get an income off of it? So thank you.
Question from Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And my question, Representative Falk somewhat touched on, is that because this is a program that has existed, we should have data. We should be able to see if the county assessor has devalued the property. The assessed value of that land, we should have that data. It's a relatively small universe where we could see, we put in a credit because we anticipated that there'd be a property tax, a property value reduction on this property. We should be able to see that because we have implemented this over several years. And if the credit has had an impact relative to that property tax valuation, there may be, as the revenue person had said, you have appreciating land values because of appreciating values on agricultural land of a similar quality outside of the zone. We should be able to see that data as well because we have implemented this. So I would ask, and I realize it's not here for this committee, but if we're talking a relatively small amount, 100 grand here, of people who have received this credit, was it merited? Did what was anticipated in the fear happen? And what has been the impact of this credit? And that should be something that should be available for the tax committee in terms of, has the valuation dropped? What has the county assessor done in there looking at the value of this property?
Representative Morrow.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Fabian, I'm back to the $100,000. Can you tell me what budget line that $100,000 is going to come from?
Representative Fabian.
Mr. Chair, Representative Morrow, no, I cannot.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Morrow.
I know you want to move this on to taxes, but I've got some concerns. I don't know if this is going to come out of the Department of Ag budget or, you know, the Ag Committee budget. I don't have a fiscal note. No one on the committee has a fiscal note. I'm going to encourage you to consider laying this bill over until we can see the fiscal note and understand what budget line $100,000 is going to come from. I'm not trying to be difficult. I understand the need to move the bill forward, but I don't know where the money's coming from. And I think these are questions that the Ag Committee should know before moving it on to taxes, because it could be this committee's budget, and we are a finance committee. And so that's a statement. I'll let others respond to it as well. But I have concerns about moving it forward without knowing where the money's coming from and without seeing a fiscal note, and we are the Ag Finance Committee.
Mr. Hines, any comment on that as far as where the money could possibly come from? You mentioned $100,000 as an estimate. Your thoughts on where these funds would come from?
Mr. Chair, I would just, all I could say is that it is posed as just a general fund appropriation. I would imagine that if you sent it to the tax committee and didn't include it in your bill, it wouldn't be part of come out of an ag budget if there was an ag budget. But how the targets might be set and where this would fit in, I really couldn't say. And it's not obvious where there'd be a source of money to pay for this.
Okay. And again, I would just say again that this is going to be brought to the tax committee, reconciled in that tax committee, and I think our focus should be on the agricultural aspects of this bill, and the tax committee will again vet the funding source and the amount in their committee. Representative Morrow.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess, and maybe I'm just being unclear on the process, but what I'm concerned is if we find out that the $100,000 is going to come from the Department of Ag, that a target will be adjusted. I don't know the budget process well enough, Mr. Chair, but what I do know is that it could affect another Ag budget to find the $100,000. We just don't know the answer to that. So I'm concerned about moving a bill forward to a committee that's not focused on Ag to make a determination that would ultimately affect an ag-related budget. And, Mr. Chair, I still have the general question. This is a finance committee. We don't have a fiscal note. Why are we moving a bill forward without a fiscal note?
I take your question under advisement, your comments under advisement. Is there any further testimony from members of the committee? Mr. Hines?
Mr. Chair, I should have mentioned one other thing. Is at the time the bill would come to the tax committee, a formal fiscal note would be prepared by the Department of Revenue for this bill.
Okay, thank you. Any further questions by members of the committee? Any other members of the... Oh, I'm sorry, Representative Paul.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Fabian, or to whoever's here from the department that could speak to this, how long do we anticipate there to be this TB zone that we still have to deal with? How long until we can definitively say that this is no longer to be an issue? I mean, we may not know 100%, but best case scenario, best estimate, please.
Dr. Hartman or Representative Fabian?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Falk, I'll let Dr. Hartman address that, but it is kind of complicated.
Mr. Chair, Dr. and Hartman. Representative Falk, The plan that DNR has in that area now is to do surveillance next fall. And when they do that during the hunting season, if they don't find any positives, then their plan would be to stop after that. Their sampling, the results aren't in, though, until probably spring. So we would have the restrictions on until that surveillance was done. And if they were all negative, then we would stop the restrictions on the farms in that area. But if there's a positive, then it's possible that this could go on for a longer period of time.
Representative Falk.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess I'd have to try to refresh my memory. I know we both serve on the Environment Committee, but how much have we appropriated to the DNR for some of this TB management? Because if they're going to be winding down that activity, I'm speculating that it's in excess of $100,000, but we should be looking at these things in conjunction, because there is the cost from the general fund to pay for this program, and there's also the cost that we have for the management of the TB by the DNR. And so if that process is starting to be wound down, maybe we could look at some of that as an appropriate funding source for this credit, as opposed to just taking it out of the general fund, because we know that there's huge needs in the general fund when it comes to repaying the school shift or any number of other things. And so I just want to make sure that we're being as prudent, that we're not paying for two areas of management when if we are in the process of winding them both down.
And with that comment, Representative Fabian, tell that to the tax committee, that you'd have a preferential place where the money would come from, but again, take that up with the tax committee. Representative, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr.
Representative
Chair.
Beacon.
And and there's been a lot of talk about the cost to the state. I just, I guess, want to focus some attention, too, on the cost to the farmers again, who have experienced the difficulties here. And I don't know if commentary can be given. I know it varies, you know, depending on the farmer and the size of the farm and operation and so on. But the tax credit that's being offered here, I would guess, pales in comparison to the cost that they're incurring because of this devastating disease that's spreading through the bovine community here. And again, I think it's important to note, you know, that that the containment and the eradication of the bovine TB is a benefit to our whole state, and I don't think that the whole burden should be placed on the backs of those, you know, who are most directly impacted here, the farmers. All of us who are benefiting should be contributing something to the cost, to the benefits that we incur. And I don't know if you can give any commentary on the cost to the farmers and how much they've been incurring in cost to help contain this.
Dr. Hartman, that may be a question for you.
Representative Anderson,
Representative Fabian.
Chair Anderson and Representative Eakin, you are right. There has been a significant cost to them. I don't know what the budget has called for in the past, but if you expand that, if Dr. Hartman can do a little extrapolation here with the number of people that are involved now compared to the past, it might give us some clarity.
Dr. Hartman.
Mr. Chair and Representative Eakin, as I mentioned before, we were managing 276 herds. During this whole process, we were managing herds throughout the entire state. There was a time when USDA, because of our drop in status, USDA required us to test 1,500 herds statewide to prove that the disease wasn't in other parts of the state. The emotional and financial impacts on this region of the state have been tremendous. I was in a room with the first herd that we found, having to tell him that we got positive results on his herd. He had 500 cows. They were purebred Black Angus and Tarentaise cattle. He'd been developing this herd for 35 years. He was going to retire and move up there and be with on that property and with that herd. The day I had to tell him about this, he and my district veterinarian that were there cried. It's just been a tremendous burden on these people financially, emotionally. We're coming out of it, but this is one area I think that is still under restriction, and they still have the same sort of financial losses that others have had in the past.
Representative Vogel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, I know I'm kind of new at all of this procedure stuff, but in addressing Representative Morrill's issue, is it not the purview of the chair of this committee that if something did happen in tax committee and they were to put it on the ag, mm-hmm. we could re-refer it, call it back here, and then we would address it if that was mm-hmm. the need. Correct?
I believe that's the case.
So, okay.
Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Vogel, that's what I was about to propose to Chair Anderson, that if this bill ends up hitting any ag-related budget, I want a commitment from the chair that the chair is going to request that this bill come back to this committee so we can have a debate. And again, I think Representative Eakin's raising the right point. We want to help the farmers, absolutely. I just want to make sure we're doing our job when it's ag-related budget. So I'm going to ask the chair to commit to recalling this bill back to this committee, Representative Fabian, if it affects an ag-related budget. And Representative Fabian, you should know where the money is coming from when you bring a bill, and that's why I was asking about the fiscal note. We don't need a fiscal note on every bill, but when we're spending money, we should have a fiscal note. So I'm a little concerned that we don't yet know where the money's coming from. Mr. Chair, I will drop my objection with your commitment that the bill will come back here if it touches an ag budget.
I would say that's a very good point, and yes, we certainly will call the bill back if it would affect any budget pertaining to agriculture. Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Morrow, I commit to that as well. I'm willing to work with all parties on this, whether it's the people in the committee here, it's Department of Revenue, it's the Board of Animal Health. I just want this problem solved. Thank you very much.
One final question from Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Dr. Hartman, what was the genetic source of the TB?
Dr. Hartman.
Mr. Chair and Representative Hansen, they did spelligotyping on it, and I'm not a real expert on spelligotyping, but they said it was most similar to bacteria that are found in southwestern United States or in Mexico.
Follow-up? Dr. Hartman, I just had a question as we were listening to the testimony. You said the original funding was going to stop when the TB zone officially ended. And I realize hindsight is 2020, but was there thought given that the costs would not end when the TB zone area was officially over? Are these new additional costs, or were these costs going to be ongoing even after the zone was declared over? Dr. Hartman.
Mr. Chairman, the thought was that when the state became TB-free, the restrictions would be removed from everybody. We didn't anticipate that we would get free status and then still have this zone and DNR doing surveillance in it. So it was an unanticipated.
So that's a key point, and I thank you for that clarification.
Sure.
Any other questions, Representative Eakin?
I just have one more question. Thank you, Mr. Chair, on the issue of the property tax and whether, you know, the restrictions were reflected in a drop in property tax or in the valuation of the land. And I know that would be a question, again, for revenue. But is there a standard procedure for assessors that do they just look at the long-term viability of the land, or do they take into consideration, you know, temporary restrictions that may be placed on the land?
As Mr. Nord makes his way back down? Mr. Nord.
Mr. Chair and Representative Eakin, you know, I can't really speak to that. I work more on the credit and payment side of it than I do on the assessment side of it. So that would be a good question to ask more of an assessment expert. But, you know, I believe assessors can take any number of factors into account when establishing a value. Generally, their goal is to identify what the market, the true market, in an open and fair market, what that would bring. And so I would think that they would be able to take into account kind of temporary turns in a market and not just have to look at kind of long-term trends.
Okay, and thank you for that.
Mr. Chair, so
there may be some reflection, although it seems to me that, you know, if you're selling land on the market, people will be looking at it not just from the standpoint of its profitability for the next year. They will be looking at long-term profitability. So, you know, the temporary restriction may not be, I think, adequately reflected in the loss of revenue to the farmers and to those that are being directly impacted here. But it would be useful information to find for the future, I guess, and understanding the implications of this bill.
Any final thoughts, Representative Fabian?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, committee, for the opportunity to bring this bill forward today. I commit to work with you as we bring this forward to answer any questions, and I appreciate the opportunity to be here. Thank you very much.
And Representative Vogel, would you renew your motion?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'd like to renew my motion to pass House File 1890 onto the tax meeting.
With the stipulation that if it affects any ag budgets,
that
come back.
That it be referred to our committee, yes.
Okay, you've heard the motion. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign.
Aye.
Motion prevails. Representative Schumacher, would you peruse the minutes and approve those from our last meeting, please?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
All in favor of the minutes being approved, say aye.
Aye.
Same sign, opposed. Minutes are approved. Next up, Representative Bruce Anderson with the House File 539. Now, Representative, you can move your own bill forward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Appreciate that. Mr. Chair, I'd like to move House File 539 be recommended to pass and moved on to taxes. And
very good.
I've talked with the Chair of Taxes, and he said that if need be, they would re-refer it back to property taxes because it does deal with property tax issues. And I have some testifiers here that are going to come and testify on behalf of the bill. And basically, this is a bill that we've taken up many times before, and it's been around. But the big thing that is, as you look into the bill summary, and basically, you know, we don't want to, as the term is, beat a dead horse. anyway,
it's Thursday.
It's Thursday, yeah, right? Under Chapter 273, livestock are considered an agricultural product, but the term livestock is not defined. The absence of a legislative definition essentially delegates the authority to define livestock, and by extension, those livestock operations that are eligible for the lower agricultural property tax rate to county assessors, and Minnesota Department of Revenue. And basically, when an assessor goes out to a farm and cannot make a determination one way or the other, they are left to their own discretion. But I know in talking to assessors, they do that with other forms of agriculture, not just horses. But we have members, individuals that would like to come and testify on behalf of House File 539. And you have in your packets, members, some comments that were made back from Commissioner to Commissioner Ward Innes, from Commissioner at the time, Gene Hugeson. And there's other letters in behind there and other statements that were made. You also have on the on the last page, a single page, that shows different designations of animals that were designated as livestock, from farm-raised cervidae to ratatae and also llamas. So I would like to introduce the my testifiers, if that's okay, Mr. Chair.
Go ahead, Representative. Okay.
Mr. Chair, I have with me Mr. Dave Dayon, and he is with the Horse Breeders Association of Minnesota, and also a professor from the University of Minnesota to testify on behalf of the bill, and I'll let them introduce themselves.
Good morning, and welcome to the committee. And please identify yourselves.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. My name is Dr. Krishona Martinson, and I'm a professor in the Animal Science Department at the University of Minnesota.
Go ahead with your testimony.
All right, well, thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity to be here. I appreciate the opportunity to tell you that horses have always been classified as livestock in both Minnesota and nationally. Minnesota is home to about 150,000 to 180,000 estimated horses and about 13,000 horse farms. The Minnesota Horse Expo is the largest livestock expo in the state, and we have about 60 different breeds represented at that Horse Expo. So again, a very diverse industry that we have. Similar to cattle, swine, sheep, and pigs, the University of Minnesota maintains a horse herd for teaching, research, and extension purposes. At the federal level, horses are and always have been considered livestock, again, similar to cattle, sheep, and pigs. The United States Department of Agriculture considers horses livestock. The USDA supports research of horses, similar to the other livestock species, and this research funding is critical to researchers like myself at the University of Minnesota for horse management, health, and nutrition. The USDA does not fund pet and companion animal research. The USDA National Agricultural Statistics Service, every 5 years they do an agricultural census. Again, horses are included on that census along with other forms of livestock. Nationally, APHIS, the Animal Health Plant Inspection Service, also tracks horse diseases like they do other livestock, and also international travel of horses, so horses coming into and out of the country. I don't know if any of you are familiar with the horse show that was here, Cavalia. They were involved in that part of getting those horses here. In Minnesota, the Minnesota Department of Agriculture has always considered horses livestock. In Minnesota, again, they've always been considered livestock. The Minnesota Board of Animal Health, we just heard from Dr. Hartman, horses also fall under his category, along with cattle, sheep, pigs, swine, and other livestock. The one thing that does make Minnesota and the horse industry a little bit different is because of our diversity, it is a little hard to track down some census data. Unlike other entities, we do not have a central marketing. They're not sold for milk. They don't have a meat product, so there's no central marketing. Also, the horse industry does not receive any egg subsidies. That may be music to your ears. So again, we do not have those ways to track populations of horses. And that can be a challenge with highlighting the importance and the economic impact of the industry in the state. So again, horses have always been considered livestock, both nationally and in this state, and they're a really vital part to our agricultural economy and also the Minnesota's and the national economy. So thank you.
Thanks, Dr. Martinson. Any questions from members of the committee? I had one, Doctor. You mentioned the number of horses and the number of horse farms. Any idea how many acres that would involve in Minnesota that are classified, as you call, in horse farms?
Sure, Mr. Chair. We conducted a survey about 5 years ago of horse owners just through our through the Extension Service, and we found that the average horse farm is approximately 20 acres. So you can kind of divide that out, and of course, there's great diversity, just like there are with other livestock. But that's one point that you could possibly use.
Okay, thank you very much. Any other questions, Representative Hansen?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I understand your point about horses being livestock, but the issue of the bill is the property tax break and whether or not that should be there. And the reason we've been talking about this for several years is the concept to put the pony in the backyard and get your property tax break. And that's different than farming horses. That's different than the Amish using horses. That's different than boarding horses. But there is a phenomenon of put the pony in the backyard to get your property tax break. And it happens on 10-acre lots in the exurban areas where there's McMansions of wealthy people, and that property tax increase then is paid by people in the first-tier suburbs in those same counties. So that's the issue. I'm very sympathetic. I understand about horses, but I have no sympathy at all for giving property tax breaks or putting a pony in the backyard to get that property tax break.
Comment, Dr. Martinson.
Mr. Chair, we completely agree with you, actually. This definition, horses as livestock, I think we need to think about it as a separate issue. When it comes to property taxes, you need to meet three criteria. 10 continuous acres, you must turn a profit, and it must be an agricultural pursuit. So obviously individuals that have one horse that are not in an agricultural pursuit would not be able to classify, have an A classification. We have never, ever argued that, and we agree with you. What we want to clarify is that horses are livestock. So I think you need to look at it. Yes, it's connected, but there are two very different issues. And we've never argued with the property classification statement.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I predict we'll be back here within 5 years where assessors are going to be having appeals come from people who've put maybe two ponies in the backyard who say that they need their property taxes reduced.
Further questions, Representative Falk.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess my question is it, we're saying that horses are livestock. Beyond what Representative Hansen mentioned with like maybe the Amish farming with horses, or you know anybody beyond the Amish farming with horses, when you're looking at livestock, how do you derive revenue from horses?
Question for Dr. Martinson.
Sure. There are hundreds of ways that you can drive revenue from horses. Number one, we have a huge racehorse industry and a brand new harness racetrack. I guess it's 3 years old. So there's racing industry, there's a rodeo industry, there's a show industry. There are many products that are made from horses. So there is a significant industry in Minnesota Our economics department estimates that the horse industry generates $1 billion annually in industry. So it may not be as obvious as meat or milk, but there are many opportunities, and perhaps Mr. Dayan can expand on that as well.
Follow-up, Representative Falk.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I kind of expected the racing industry as one. I know that that's a fairly specialized industry, and a lot of horses actually come from out of state that race at our tracks. Not all of them are in state. Some of them are, but I would love to see how many actually, you know, horses that would reside in this type of classification actually are race horses. I think the number would be quite slim. I would also contend, too, that those things that you listed, such as racing or rodeos, I don't know if I would classify that as agriculture-related income. I'd almost classify that as entertainment or wherever the people who operate those facilities. I don't know if they would be filling out, say, like a Schedule F income tax form for farm income. I think it might be something different. So I don't know if that would meet the classification, because once again, we are talking about a tax issue here as to whether or not for revenue or profitability purposes that we're talking about agriculture versus some other form of commerce.
Dr. Martinson.
I think Mr. Dayan would like to address that.
If
Mr.
I could,
Dayan.
My name is David Dayan. I'm a spokesperson for the horse industry, but I think I can address your question, Representative Falk. I own a horse farm. I breed racehorses in this state, and I'm one of many racehorse breeders in this state. I disagree with your comment that most horses that race in Minnesota are coming from out of state. Over 50% of the population at Canterbury Park during the racehorse meet are Minnesota-owned and Minnesota-bred horses. So quite the opposite is the case. There are many misconceptions out there about the horse industry. I make my living in the horse industry. I have had revenues at my farm in excess of $250,000 a year. This isn't some backyard ponies type of situation. This is a huge industry. We're the largest consumer of baled hay in the state of Minnesota. We're a huge consumer of grain. All the ancillary industries that are attached to us, like the veterinarians, the people that build the stalls, we buy machinery, we're buying equipment constantly to maintain our operations. I think if you look around drive down the road any day of the week and you'll see a horse trailer and a dually pickup, so obviously we're a big consumer of the automotive industry, the horse trailer industry. So this isn't just some minuscule little situation with a couple of riding horses that we keep getting depicted as. This is a huge industry with a lot of offshoots. As far as horse products, the horse itself is a tremendous product. I've got a book here on agricultural statistics dating back to the 1920s. Even back in 1856, horses were valued at $58 a head, dairy cattle were valued at $28 a head, and hogs were valued at $4 a head. So even back in the 1800s, there was a lot of value as attributed to the horses and the horse industry. They've always been part of the statistical surveys for both USDA and the state of Minnesota. In addition to that, there are numerous products derived from horses, and some of them you're probably not even aware of. Estrogen replacement for women, the only natural occurring source of it is from pregnant mares. Platelet-rich plasma, which is a new innovation in the medical industry right now, is a major product that's only derived from horses. It's one of the newest things that just came out. I read an article where athletes are using platelet-rich plasma derived from horses to treat post-operative surgery on ligaments like ACLs and Tommy John surgery with the ligaments. And one of the other big clients was the golfer that had the knee surgery, Tiger Woods. Use platelet-rich plasma. It enhances the recovery process. I'm also in the business of treating, doing surgical rehab on horses. I just had a horse released to the owner yesterday that we've been treating for the last 3 months. It severed both a tendon and a ligament. It's a front leg in a trailer accident. those ligaments and tendons were reattached and it was treated with stem cells. That horse is now, instead of a situation where that horse would have possibly been put down 5 years ago, that horse now is completely sound and was cleared yesterday by the veterinarians to return to being a usable, rideable show horse again. So another major stem cell research item was that there was a donkey in California that was attacked by a horse who picked it up by its back and severed its spine. It was sent to the University of Cal Davis in May. They reattached the spinal cord and treated it with high doses of stem cells that they used or that were donated by a thoroughbred horse. So they were able to take an animal that was injured, take donor stem cells, inject those into the injured area. They did this over a period of time from May to September. In September, that donkey was completely healed and able to walk about out in the pasture on his own. This has been a tremendous breakthrough for human spinal cord injury. The fact that you can use donor stem cells and the way in which they use them in the horse industry has been a real eye-opener for the medical industry. All of the anti-rejection drugs that are used for organ transplant situations, all of those anti-rejection drugs are derived from horse serum, horse blood serum. That is your main source. It's the only source of those anti-rejection drugs. It's also the only source of anti-rejection or of anti-venom drugs for snake bites, spider bites. There are some new things out there now called autologous condition serum, which is another blood-derived medication that is coming onto the market now that shows a lot of help in healing people with depleted immune systems. So to say, in addition to that, you've still got the horse hide, the horse meat. It's used extensively in the cosmetic industry. So I'm sorry, but there's all kinds of uses for horses out there that nobody even realizes on a day-to-day basis. So it's not just the pony in the mega mansion in the backyard situation. There's a huge industry out there. There are medical research labs that are contracting for horses on a regular basis. Your Premarin farms are contracting for horses on a regular basis, in addition to all the recreational uses of the horse that are out there. But the horse itself, value-wise, has a substantial amount of value too, both as a recreational animal, as a research animal, and as a food animal. So, sorry to belabor the answer so long.
Comment, Representative Falk.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate some of your comments. It's a nice get a perspective on things. I guess part of my contention is we're dealing with agricultural property taxes here, and some of the more nuanced things you talked about, whether it were the platelets or the uses in the medical fields, would that be basically, would that revenue flow through on a farm schedule, or would that go through on some other form of income tax reporting?
Mr. Dayon.
Excuse me. Mr. Chair, Representative Falk, that money doesn't flow directly to me and from the research. Where I make my money is selling those horses to the research facilities. So after they've and there again, these horses have multiple uses. A horse is not a single-use animal, so they can be used for instance, a horse may start out his career as a racehorse. When his racing career is over, he may become a riding horse. When his riding career is over, he may become a research animal. When his research days are over with, he may become a meat animal. So he flows down through the system, so there are several uses and several manners of generating income off of them. But the basic situation is the same as with other agriculture. It starts with we have to raise the animal to begin with. And that's the whole idea behind the horse farms, is we're raising the initial animal, training him for whatever task we want him to perform, and raising him and then marketing him accordingly.
A follow-up, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I appreciate that, and I think that you've really kind of made the argument where there are distinctions between people who are involved in real legitimate businesses versus, as Representative Hansen alluded to, put the pony or two ponies in the backyard and get a tax break. And so that's where we have to be very clear that a legitimate business, a legitimate farming operation is the one that's involved in agriculture that is getting this benefit, but it's not being just used as a means to get a tax break, because that's going to put a black eye in your entire industry if that's what ends up being the case, and I know that you wouldn't want that. I would just make the comment, too, final comment here, that I would appreciate all of the information you gave regarding the advances in the medical fields. I'd almost like to see that presented in the Health and Human Services Committee, so maybe we should consider referring this bill over to either Representative Abler's or Representative Gottwald's committees to have a more thorough discussion there.
Comments? Let's move on to the next question from Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Anderson, I think that we pretty much know that this is a property tax bill and not an ag bill. I've just been trying to follow the logic as I've been looking at
The bill. Representative Anderson, we've already decided that horses are livestock, haven't we?
We hope so.
I mean, if I'm looking at the section that you're seeking to amend,
exactly.
And I'm looking at other sections in Minnesota statute, it seems to me that we've settled the question of whether horses are livestock. I think the question is whether a horse training farm, horse boarding farm, or farm combining these purposes are an intensive agricultural use. Is that a fair way to characterize the bill?
That's a good
Representative Anderson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Morrow, that's what's been laid out there on the bill, 539.
Yeah. I have a couple questions. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Anderson, I think we heard that, the green acres of the property tax exemption would be limited to farms of 10 acres or more. That's not actually what happens in this bill, is it?
Mr.
Chair. Representative
Anderson. Representative Morrow, no.
If I understand... thank you, Mr. Chair. I apologize. Representative Anderson, I'm not trying to grill you. I'm just trying to make it very clear because I think we had a misconception earlier. Conceivably, a horse training farm or a horse breeding farm of less than 10 acres would at least conceivably receive better property tax treatment if this bill becomes law. Is that correct?
Representative Anderson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Morrow, no, it doesn't necessarily get better treatment if it's on less than 10 acres. It basically, as the statement is here, it talks about intensive agriculture, and that is determined then by receipts and things of tax nature that you would see when you submit your property taxes or your income taxes, and the assessor would like to see that. That's part of his preview to say we're trying to determine where on all this. So not necessarily does that mean just because we're on less than 10 acres does it get preferential treatment.
Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Maybe I could ask Mr. Hines or Mr. Sullivan. I'm trying to understand the bill, and I may be reading it incorrectly, so maybe, Mr. Sullivan, I'll turn to you. I'm looking at your House research memo dated March 1st, 2011. Maybe this isn't the right place to go. I'm trying to understand whether a horse breeding farm of less than 10 acres would qualify for green acres or other property tax treatment because it is an intensive agricultural use.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Sullivan.
Mr. Chair and Representative Morrow. I'll let my colleague Steve Hines build on anything I leave out here, but my understanding is that the term intensive agricultural use has a specific meaning within Chapter 273 property tax law, and in general, agricultural operations have to be 10 acres in size to receive ag property classification, unless they're smaller than that but constitute an intensive agricultural use.
Mr. Hines.
I just add one other piece of that is the 10-acre rule is pretty much inviolate, though, with regard to green acres. So you typically would not be able to get into green acres without being 10, but there is the intensive on the, just to get agricultural classification that Mr. Sullivan was referring to.
Maybe I'll turn to Representative Anderson. That's kind of the point I'm getting at. It's not that I'm objecting. I want to be clear that it could be a horse breeding farm of less than 10 acres being an intensive agricultural use would receive an ag property tax classification, or at least potentially. If I understand Mr. Hines and Mr. Sullivan correctly, that's at least the potential if we move this bill.
Representative Anderson or Mr. Dayon?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Mr. Dayon would like to address that issue.
If you would go to the handout.
Mr. Dayon.
I'm sorry, Chairman Anderson, Representative Morrow, if you'd go to the handout, which I gave out here, and if you would go to the last three pages of that handout, there's a bulletin to the county assessor's property tax division. On the bottom of that bulletin, it's highlighted that under 273.13 subdivision 23, that in order to get ag classification, you must meet three requirements. That it must be 10 acres or more, you must be producing an agricultural product, and it must be produced for sale or profit. If you would then go to the next page, you have a set of guidelines to all assessors, administrative guidelines for classifying property used for horse breeding and boarding. And if you go down through there, it must be 10 acres. The agricultural product must be for sale. It also answers the previous question that number five, land use to produce horses or raise horses bred or raised for sale, qualifying for the 10 acres, must have more than one or two horses in order to qualify. It specifically states under item seven, horses used for personal or recreational do not enable to qualify for agricultural classification because there are no products being produced in this situation. So I think it's that the assessor's bulletins here that are put out by the Department of Revenue are fairly clear and concise that in order to qualify, that the horses have to be produced for profit, that they are simply not a situation. And as far as the Green Acres part of it, I think that this legislation has had the misfortune of being introduced at the same time of the Green Acres controversy. I've been attending the property tax working group meetings, and Mr. Nord and a gentleman by the name of Mr. Michael Schallberger have, in particular, gave a PowerPoint demonstration, and he specifically stated that just because you have ag classification does not mean that you meet the requirements for Green Acres. In other words, there's one set of requirements for ag status and a totally different set of requirements of higher standards in order to get Green Acres. So the correlation that somehow all horse operations are going to get Green Acres is not a true statement.
Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Now, your point about Green Acres is absolutely right. I misspoke, and I correct myself. I would note, though, on the June 15, 2010 Department of Revenue memo, point number one, at least 10 contiguous acres must be for agricultural production, not including the rare exceptions for exclusive or intensive use, and this bill defines it as agricultural intensive use. So, Representative Anderson, I am going to just turn to you because I want to understand your intent. I'm okay with it. I'm going to ask the next question. It doesn't bother me that, I just want to be clear, a horse breeding farm less than 10 acres, because it's an agricultural intensive use, could qualify for ag property tax classification. Am I right?
It's very possible.
Representative Anderson.
Mr. Chair. Mr. Representative Morrow, yes.
Okay.
Representative Morrow.
Thank you. And I just wanted to be clear about that. And it's not, again, I think it's a property tax issue more than an ag issue. But here's my question. If it's livestock breeding, in this case, a horse breeding farm, and we've defined livestock to include everything from chickens and poultry to llamas and the like, I'm just wondering what happens when someone starts breeding chickens as an intensive agricultural use. I don't know the answer to that. I honestly don't, represent Anderson, but I know that in Mankato, for example, we had issues about people wanting to raise chickens in downtown Mankato. And this is, it came up in the context of the Green Acres discussion. That's why I think I made that erroneous step. So I'm just worried about that opening of the barn door. And I want to understand why, if horses are livestock, breeding livestock is agricultural, agricultural gets, or at least potentially gets, ag property classification, how do we say no to the next livestock group that makes the very same argument? I want to understand why it would stop with horses.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Or Mr. Dayan.
Mr. Dayan. Well,
Chairman Anderson and Representative Moore, I would just refer to the exact same language that you just referred to. It is a rare exception. But if it is that controversial, I don't see a problem with taking the intensive use out of this bill. If that's all we have to do is remove the intensive use from this bill, and then the revenue department agrees to remove the subpart 3 repealer, then let's move the bill forward and make it a good ag definition, and everybody will be happy.
Representative Purcell, or did you have a follow-up?
No, I'm thinking.
Okay. Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, that was my point, and I'd make a motion to remove that language.
We did it once before.
If that is can be in order at the appropriate time.
Mr.
Chairman Anderson and Representative Powell, in 2010, I made that exact overture, and the Revenue Department still would not remove the repealer 3, which says it can't be used for property tax definition. So,
Representative Purcell?
And if I'm reading the bill right, I'm talking about removing it from your bill.
Representative Anderson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Purcell. Yes, we did, that was proposed several sessions ago, and we weren't able to satisfy Department of Revenue, so we put it back in. So we're kind of going back and forth here. One time we think it's okay, and we put it in, then it's not. Then the next time we don't have it in, and it's still not okay. So we're up against what Department of Revenue, and that's basically when we're going to get the property taxes. Hopefully they're going to be there and be able to share. We met with the Department of Revenue 3 weeks ago. We asked them to come up with further definitions or clarifications of what this bill is and what the verbiage that we have in the bill is that causes them heart pain. Or more, well, I won't go any further than that. But so that's where we're at. We've had it in there, Mr. Chair, Representative Purcell. We've had intensive agriculture in there. We've taken it out and presented it that way, and they didn't like it then either. And so when we met with them 3 weeks ago, they said, we'll have to get back to you. And so we're working with the department to get some, tell us what you want.
So it's a work in progress.
We're willing to work with them.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're willing to work with them.
We do have testimony from the public, but one more question from Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think the challenge here is that this bill is to provide, it has an effect of providing for less than 10 acres, as Representative Morrow said. Nobody's debating the issue of production, large-scale farms, or the benefits that come from horse breeding. But we've been dealing with this issue for several years now because of this, the exception. The exception's become the rule. And there are people who are on less than 10 acres that want the property tax reduction. And they may be a few, but that's part of it. And so I thought maybe the way to amend this was to be on line 1.10 is to add after unlimited acreage of at least 10 acres. If that would be a solution, unlimited acreage of at least 10 acres. If that would be a solution. But it's a question if this bill is going to move out of here today. If that's the intent of the chair, then I would probably move that amendment. If that's what you want. If you want to move the bill out today.
Okay, so you're offering that as an oral amendment?
I'd offer that as an oral amendment.
Mr. Chair, could you restate Representative Anson, restate that amendment?
On line 1.10, after the word acreage, the period, insert of at least 10 acres, period.
So he would add the 10-acre standard on line 1.10. That's your intent.
And Mr. Chair, to my amendment, I think we've learned that we always need to say what we mean in clear, direct language. And I realize that there's guidance from the Revenue Department, but guidance can change, and interpretations can change. And they'll have to go back and do guidance whenever we change the statute, and then there may be rule changes. So part of our responsibility as legislators is to say what we mean.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I'm saying here, which may or may not fly, but I think we should try to limit this to the production that is to not have those potential cases where they will be debated with the assessor year after year for this. So that's the reason for my amendment.
To the bill's author, your comments on
yes,
the amendment.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen, what about just taking out after the word on 1.9, taking after the comma behind purposes, take out the rest of the language? Horse breeding farms, horse training farms, horse boarding farms, or farms combining these purposes.
Period?
Period.
Of our intensive agriculture. Of at least 10 acres.
While you're discussing that possible amendment, let's hear from a member of the audience who wants to testify, Mr. Efforts, who wanted to offer his testimony on this bill. Welcome, and identify yourself for the record, please.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Bill Efforts. I'm the Steele County Assessor, and I'm here today on behalf of the Minnesota Association of Assessing Officers, and I appreciate the opportunity to come before you today. Hopefully I can shed a little bit of light on this issue. When the language in Chapter 17 was first offered to make horses as livestock, we did express that concern that what were the unintended consequences of doing this. And I think our main concerns have been well articulated by some of the representatives in this discussion today about how to separate residential or recreational home horses use versus the more substantial horses. Excuse me. So that's why we asked for the non-applicability statute to 273 and property taxes. Since that time, there was the report on horse boarding and breeding operations, and from that report, the Department of Revenue did have some guidelines that were even referenced here today that are pretty clear, or that we thought provided clarity for assessors on how to treat horses when it regards to property taxes. So we have that in place, and we are treating horses as livestock in our agricultural classification practices at this time. And if an operation is significant enough where they are in intensive use on limited acreage, even those issues are rare, we would grant that agricultural classification in those rare circumstances. So I guess I just wanted to provide some of that feedback, and I think what some of the problems that, or the issues that we'd like to express to you for your consideration, is that in the language where it says that horse farms, breeding, boarding, or the combination of that, so it's pretty explicit. It says are to be considered intensive use. So that's where we think that the interpretation might be expanded into the more of the residential or recreational farms. That's where we are always trying to separate the significant operations versus the more sparsely use of the horses.
Representative Morrow has a question or comment.
Representative Anderson, I'm trying to help you out here. I wonder, in hearing this testimony, would it work on line 1.9 to replace R to may be or may be considered, to at least give the option? What I'm hearing is it's the definite, it is intensely agricultural. You might get flexibility by simply putting in may be or may be considered an intensive agricultural use.
Mm-hmm. Representative Anderson, or a comment from Mr. Efforts on that possibility?
Because, Mr. Chair, we have taken out intensive agricultural before, and it sounds like this seems to be the sticking point here. I'm just wondering if we take, as we have in the past, just as Representative Purcell had mentioned, we just take out the intensive agriculture and just basically, we're Representative Morrow's referencing, purposes are, take out the word intensive, agriculture, period, and delete the rest. I don't know if Representative Purcell has any comment on that or not, but we've done this before.
Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Anderson. I believe that following then on 1.10, we would need to remove the word intensive as well.
Yes. We take... Mr. Chair.
Representative Anderson.
Representative Purcell, we would delete the rest of 1.9, 1.10, 1.11.
Representative Purcell.
Mr. Chair, thank you. That would accomplish what I was looking for.
Okay.
I have a concern that we're getting a little bit complicated here with the offers of amendments and such, and if members feel that they need more clarification as to what the amendment is, we can lay the bill over until next week, or if you want to offer a concrete amendment, Representative, we can act on that now, or we will ask you for your advice on that.
Well, Mr. Chair, if what I just offered...
Well, run that by us again so we're all crystal clear on what your intent is.
Okay. Because of what has happened in the past where we've taken out intensive agriculture, let's go to 1.9, after purposes are delete an intensive, leave in agricultural, put a period after agriculture, delete the rest of that line, delete 1.10, 1.11, 1.12, and 1.13.
Why do you want to repeal the repealer, or take out the repealer?
Well, Mr. Chip, the problem is that the Department of Revenue is having trouble with us on the repealer, and so if we can resolve that with the Department of Revenue going forward, let's have it out. We can always add it back in if they object to us taking it out. And if that doesn't, we can always lay the bill over too.
Okay, my understanding then, your bill will read on line 1.8, horse breeding farms, horse training farms, horse boarding farms, or farms combining those purposes are agricultural, period.
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
And then the rest of the language there is deleted.
That's correct.
Are there questions or concerns about that? Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair, just to give you some procedural clarity, I have the amendment on the floor. I would withdraw that so that you can work on this, just to give you, for the record.
Thanks, Representative Hansen. Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know if it's appropriate, but in light of the fairly substantial changes we're considering making in this bill, I think it'd be appropriate that we lay the bill over. And I would like to make that motion.
There's a motion been made to lay the bill over for further work. All in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The Torkelson motion is adopted.
Thank you, members. Appreciate it. We'll be back.
And the committee is adjourned. Thank you very much.